Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, 50 years of fabulous. To celebrate LGBT History Month, Frameline Distribution presents the virtual cinema release of 50 Years of Fabulous. It's an award-winning documentary about queer history in San Francisco, and in particular, about the Imperial Court, a drag institution that has changed lives here and around the world in its now half-century plus of activism. We'll hear clips from the film, and we'll learn some fascinating queer history and about drag performing as a revolutionary act, or in today's parlance, perhaps an act of resistance. Here with me to talk about the film and the history it portrays, our filmmaker, Jethro Padelinghoog. Welcome, Jethro.
Hello. Hi, Eric.
And drag performer and activist Camara Rouge, absolute Empress 50 of the Imperial Council of San Francisco, who is one of many featured in the film. Welcome, Camara.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Imperial Court, Imperial Council, we'll explain and describe shortly those terms. But before we do anything else, let's hear our first clip from the film, which has lots of wonderful archival photos and video footage. We start with Jose Saria, a longtime performer at one of San Francisco's most famous, perhaps I should say infamous or notorious bars in the 1950s and 60s. He started the Imperial Court.
Even though it was in a bar and on bar tables, I made my living by that.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And once again, I welcome you on behalf of the working staff of the Black Cat, the most famous bohemian bar in the world. It's always rather exciting to see the various people that do come down to the Black Cat, because you find wolves in sheep's clothing, shall we say. And of course, I always like to welcome the leather jacket girls, the queens that work so hard during the week. And then on Friday, they shed the Ivy League look.
And the bars were to the gay civil rights movement, what the churches were to the Black civil rights movement.
That's a clip from 50 Years of Fabulous. Jethro Padelinghoog is the filmmaker, and that's Jose Saria performing in an archival clip. And historian Paul Gabriel at the end. We'll hear more about him in a minute. Jethro, there's so much packed into just that first clip. So first of all, tell us a little bit about Jose Saria from your research for the film. Who was he and what brought him into performing at the Black Cat? And what was the Black Cat?
Wow, so many questions. Jose Saria was one of the war veterans, you know. A lot of the war veterans came to San Francisco after the war because a lot of them were not welcomed anymore by their families, and Jose Saria was one of them. And Jose Saria was aspired to be a teacher, but he was caught cruising around and doing something in a public space. So he could not pursue that profession anymore, you know, he was attracted to the nightlife. He met some friends and he found himself with a Black Cat, and he became a drag performer. The Black Cat was one of, the very first space wherein homosexuals could actually express themselves in a very safe way. But with that being said, they were still being, you know, targeted during those days. There were other bars like Finocchio's where you could see drag performers as well. But I think the Black Cat was really the first bar where homosexuals felt safe because of the Supreme Court ruling that happened during that time. And my assumption is that Jose Saria actually felt safe because of that court decision during that time. And this happened in the 1940s and 50s.
Yeah, so I was going to play that clip next, actually, because there's this common myth or misconception, perhaps, that the queer civil rights movement started with New York Stonewall riots in 1969. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it goes back much farther. And in this next clip, and tell us who these people are. It says that Saul Stueman took over ownership of the Black Cat in the late 1940s. What is it, already a gay bar then?
How would I say this?
Bohemian.
Yeah, so Black Cat was situated at the North Beach, where a lot of seafarers, a lot of, you know, transactions happened between seafarers and, you know, veterans. So a lot of vices were happening at the North Beach, and part of the bars in the North Beach was Black Cat. And Saul Stuman happens to be a business owner. He was not necessarily homosexual. He had bars. And it just so happened that Black Cat catered to the homosexuals and had drag performers. And so Black Cat was right there at the perfect time where we were, you know, people like us who could freely express themselves. And I'm sorry, what was the question again?
Oh, that's quite all right. That was very illustrative of what's going on. I mean, other historians have talked about San Francisco becoming such a gay town because of the mm-hmm. gold rush and then the war years. And there was this history of a lot of men and not many women around. So same-sex behavior was tolerated for sure. Mm-hmm. So let's play this clip. Paul Gabriel, an historian, talking about this lawsuit with the Black Cat.
What happened was, Saul Stuman takes over ownership of the Black Cat in the late 40s. And the alcoholic beverage control decides to shut him down. He decides to fight it. And he lost every single appeal, and he fought it all the way to the California Supreme Court, and he won a unanimous decision. The judges said it was not necessarily an obscene or indecent act to just serve alcohol to a known homosexual. What this really meant was that they guaranteed in California homosexuals our constitutional right of public assembly. All of this created an environment where it was more possible to be different in public.
So what happened? How did things change after that ruling?
For sure, during that time, the whole attitude towards us is still not very favorable. So the police naturally still tried to harass them every day. Even if the Supreme Court favored Saul Stuman, they would still get harassment. And that's why Jose Saria, as a performer of Black Cat, became so galvanized and felt so violated that he took it upon himself to actually fight this. And that's why he ran for public office in 1961, because they experienced this harassment throughout the 1950s, even after the court ruling. They were being continually harassed. And this is the reason why Jose Saria ran. He thought to himself, like, if no one is going to do this, then who else? You know, since he had the clout then, people looked at him. He was already, before 1961, he was already a drag queen for about 15 years. So he already had notoriety. And the homosexuals, the community then already knew him. And so I think he felt empowered that, you know, there were actually people who can back him up.
Paul Gabriel is in this film a lot. He talks a lot. Tell us just a little bit about him. Who is he?
Paul Gabriel is an historian that used to work for the GLBT Historical Society. He had an exhibit about the 60s, which featured extensively the Imperial Council of San Francisco. So I learned so much from Paul, even about things that are outside of the Imperial Council. But basically of Jose, he had private sessions with Jose. I think he sat down with Jose Saria four times. And that footage from the 50s of Jose performing was actually from Paul Gabriel. He got that straight from Jose Saria. So I love Paul. He's such an amazing historian.
Okay, thank you very much. Camara Rouge, let me bring you into the discussion now. How did you become involved in this film, 50 Years of Fabulous? And what brought you into drag performing in the first place?
Yeah, so I started my drag career in 2012. I was adopted by a Grand Duchess of San Francisco, Kylie Minogue, who, during my learning experience of how to become a drag queen, brought me to fundraisers and taught me to give back to the community right from the very beginning. And I was not aware at all of the Imperial Court system when I started drag. It was just more of a creative outlet. And I had just moved to the city in 2010 from Seattle, Washington, and had no idea of, you know, the presence of the international court system or what being part of a court meant. But after becoming involved with Grand Duchess Kylie Minogue and helping out at fundraisers and volunteering, I got to know so many amazing people and became more aware of this broad network of activism across, you know, 70 different chapters across the US, Canada, and Mexico. My whole drag career started because of a need for a creative outlet just to express myself. And it became, you know, a network of friends that led me into wanting to give back to my community. And stumbling upon the, you know, Imperial Court of San Francisco, you got to know so many great people and you learn all about this history and you get involved and volunteer your time by helping out at fundraisers and bars. That, yeah, it became, you know, you get sucked into this world of fantasy and glamour and rhinestones, and, you know, at the same time, while having fun, you're raising some serious money for various local charities that really need our support. So,
yes, I see in your bio that you've raised over $150,000 for various charities, and just in the time that you've been involved, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what's unique about the court system in San Francisco, we are elected by our community, right? It's a public election. As you see in the film, we campaign for months and we are voted on by anybody who lives within our three counties of San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin counties. And our charge is, if we win, we select charities that we want to support and, you know, do whatever we can during our reign for that 1 year to raise as much money as possible. So at the end of our year at a coronation ball, we disperse our checks and celebrate the completion of a wonderful reign.
And then the next empress and emperor come in.
And then we crown. And what's unique about San Francisco Imperial Court is, for 55 years now, we've had an unbroken chain of empresses since Jose Saria in 1965. In that time, 55 different personalities, drag queens, transgender women, people who stepped up to represent their community and have each left a very unique mark. It's also, you know, really well done and represented in the film by Jethro. So, you know, I'm so proud to be a part of this project where it showcases the unique history. Like, only in San Francisco can something that started as a political act of dressing up, you know, in the opposite gender and risking being arrested to make a statement, to live your authentic self. Like, on the outside of it, it looks so frivolous and superficial with all the drag and the performing and the makeup. You know, it's all fun, it's all make-believe. But the fact that the work we do is very real, the money we raise impacts a lot of charities that really need our support. So,
yeah, so I want to play this next cut, which is Jose Saria and Queen Mother Nicole talking about how drag really was even much more, it's still revolutionary, but it's even was much more so then. So here's this cut.
It was not easy. We did it with costume because we couldn't be real. As long as we did it with costume, we were not violating the law.
A turning point happened. There began to be a critical mass. So they had these big dances, and they had them in the fall of 1964.
The first homosexual events in a hotel were by the Imperial Court. No matter what you felt about the flamboyant drag queens, they had the guts and the determination to say, here's we are, if you don't like it, it's your problem. That galvanized people to be proud and come out, and even to come out for one night. Maybe it was the Halloween ball, maybe it was the Imperial Court coronation, but on that night, in their tuxedos and stuff, they were coming out into a homosexual event.
That's Queen Mother Nicole at the end of that clip from the film 50 Years of Fabulous. You're hearing Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are filmmaker Jethro Pataling-Hug and Camara Rouge, Empress 50 of San Francisco's Imperial Council, who is featured in the film. Camara, I understand you know Queen Mother Nicole quite well from the Imperial Council. Tell us about her, or should I say him?
Yeah, him, her, her pronouns. We change our pronouns quite often, depending if we're in makeup or not. But Nicole is Queen One, Mother of the Americas. She was appointed by Jose Saria to kind of lead the international court system, which kind of is the overall governing body of all the various chapters in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So Jose was appointed, I believe, about chapter 10, 15 years ago now, and was appointed by Jose in Seattle to take on the reins once Jose retired. So Nicole acts as the titular figurehead of the overall organization and kind of leads all the various chapters. And yeah, she acts as the queen mother for us all. We all look up to her for advice. And, you know, she, as she states in the film, you know, it's incredible what each court can do to support their own community. And yeah, it's become this amazing community where, as she often states, you know, San Francisco is this giant oak tree, right, that kind of was starts at the roots, and then we branch out, and there are so many different chapters now that people look up to San Francisco and look back to us to kind of take lead of how we should support our community, what we should do to raise money in times of needs. Like, a lot of the courts stepped up during the AIDS epidemic, where every night they were out there raising money, holding simple fundraisers and sales at bars, trying to help people, you know, live out their remaining days in comfort by helping pay rents or, you know, helping pay for bills. So the court system, while it started as a fun social kind of group, evolved into this beautiful, organic, grassroots community support fundraising arm that, you know, we are so good about being able to put together an event and raise money for needed causes. So yeah, it's incredible what it's become.
It reminds me in many ways of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, a similar, not as old of an organization, but an organization that grew up in one spot and now has branches all over the world doing this charity work. And they're, I don't know, I guess it depends how you look at it. I might say they're even more outrageous than the imperial court, than the imperial court queens and empresses and emperors. So I do want to play this one more clip, and this is when Jose decides to run for supervisor in San Francisco in 1961. As far as historians know, the first openly gay man to run for public office anywhere in America.
And I said, I want to represent you.
Jose was ready to take a leadership role.
Jose ran for the Board of Supervisors, making history, the first openly gay person to run for public office in the United States of America.
Part of his run for supervisors was harassment of the gay bars. They tried to expose the police corruption in what was called the Gayola scandal, where the bad cops, the bad investigators, would take bribes.
That was Jose Saria himself at the start of that clip from 50 Years of Fabulous, followed by former state senator Mark Leno and historian Paul Gabriel talking about Saria's run for San Francisco supervisor in 1961. That's 8 years before the Stonewall Uprising and 16 years before Harvey Milk was elected as our city's first openly gay supervisor in 1977. Saria didn't win that election, not by a long shot, but he got some 6,000 votes, and that surprised a lot of politicians and power brokers. What was the effect of that? Jethro, you want to take that one?
Yes, that was the very first time that America actually saw that there was a gay vote.
That wasn't just a local news event. People heard about that across the country.
Paul Gabriel would reiterate this to me over and over again. That was the very first time. That jump started the gay political power of America and maybe even the world. Because after that, all the politicians would now sell themselves to this particular community. After that election, all the politicians would now approach the Imperial Council and get their you know, support. As a nonprofit organization, 501c3, you know, the Imperial Council is not, you know, prohibited to endorse, but, you know, they can support politicians in so many other ways. But, you know, that was such an important part of, you know, gay political power, the history of gay political power, which, you know, now during our primaries, we already have a gay candidate to the presidency. And this did not, that candidacy to the presidency did not happen if Jose Saria did not run for public office in 1961. That's how important it is.
Yeah, definitely made a big change. Couple last questions I want to ask is, one of the themes addressed near the end of the film is whether and to what extent the Imperial Court and the Imperial Council is still relevant. I think it's seen by a lot of people I've talked to just informally who aren't within the gay community in San Francisco specifically, haven't heard of it, don't know about it. And I think among younger folks, it seemed to be, you know, what are these, you know, these old drag queens. But Chimera, when you came in, you were sort of, you were portrayed in the film as one of the newer, younger drag performers who was helping to help the council and the court get over this perception of being irrelevant. So what was your experience like running in 2015 for Empress, and how do you feel you were perceived at that time?
Sure. I started drag in 2012 and I ran for Empress in 2015. So I had a really quick trajectory of starting my drag career to kind of taking this most prestigious title in the drag, you know, community. And I was looked at as, who is this newcomer, this upstart coming out, trying to shake things up? And I take pride in that because, you know, I went on a very roundabout way of how I got to that position. Usually you will start with a pretty entry-level title and work your way up over the years. So some people spend decades working their way up to become emperor, empress of their respective courts. I show up and said, hey, I have this energy and this following with, you know, my friends that we can show up and fill fundraisers, and I'm going to do something about it. I started first with the Ducal Court of San Francisco as Queen of Hearts, then ran for Miss GAPA, which is Miss Gay Asian Pacific Alliance, and using that momentum catapulted my campaign for Empress. Right after stepping down as Miss GAPA, went right into my campaign for Empress. And it was a kind of old guard versus new guard mentality of, who is this new person trying to shake things up? And she hasn't paid her dues. Why should we vote for her? And I just showed that I have the drive, willpower, and energy and support of my community to kind of make a difference. And I think it kind of shows with the scenes from voting day where, you know, we were on a fire truck running around the Castroque, getting people to vote. There was a ton of support. It was such a fun, memorable experience. Like, looking back, I don't know how I had the energy, honestly. And I don't know how some of these, you know, I hate to use the term old queen, but like a lot of these seasoned performers and entertainers, like, it is a lot of work. It is literally a full-time job if you do it right, where you're out there literally every night at some event, some fundraiser, organizing, planning. You know, it's a burden, but also an honor to serve as a monarch, especially in San Francisco, where, you know, there's so much history, so much commitment to supporting one another. You know, the city of St. Francis, right? It's an incredible place to be, but it is also, you know, it's difficult. It can be a difficult place to live, especially now where with the pandemic, things are changing. And again, our model of holding events in bars disappeared overnight. We haven't held a major fundraiser in over 8 months, which is unheard of. And, you know, our current reign are facing some tough challenges, but, you know, as queer people do, we overcome challenges, we find a way, we make it work.
Well, let me just ask, if just before the pandemic started, did you get the sense that there was some revival of the Imperial Court and Council? Because it seems like, you know, towards the end of the film, there are some of the past empresses who, you know, they're in there putting on their makeup and they're saying, like, you know, this is a lot of work. As you just mentioned, this is a lot of work. I spend a lot of money on this. I pay my own money to go on all these trips to raise all this money. And now it seems like, you know, nobody's paying attention anymore. Do you feel like it started to come back before the pandemic hit?
I think so. I think the court system was starting to see a revival of new energy. It, you know, the court system does a great job of raising money, but self-promotion and awareness is something that continues to this day that it still needs to work on, with getting new membership and people involved. Because if you don't get new people in and showing them that this is a worthwhile cause to donate your time to, you know, it'll fade away. Like, you can't hold an event with the same five people to show up each time. So getting new people involved and interested and engaged is key to the survival of any court. And I think a lot of the court systems were facing that in 2015, where, you know, after 50 years, like, are we still relevant? Are we still here to make a difference? And I think that was right at the beginning of the Trump administration, where people were just, you know, after coming off of 8 years of, you know, Barack Obama, and then seeing like how quickly all of the rights and hard work we've worked for can disappear overnight, really also galvanized a lot of people. But now there are so many other avenues and ways to get involved or give back, that, you know, the court system is facing that next step of, what do we do to remain relevant?
I'm glad you brought up Trump because, Jethro, I noticed that the film had its world premiere in May of 2018, mm-hmm. but there's a section near the end where you talk about the Trump administration's rollbacks to gay, lesbian, and transgender rights. Is that something you added to the original version? Because it looks pretty fresh or pretty current.
Yeah, we were at the tail end of our editing during that time when we added that. So it was natural for us to add that bit. Trump is basically the newest, version of challenges that our community has to face. And it was, only natural for us to put that in.
Okay, thank you. Last thing, of course, I have to ask this. Tell us about the event on Friday, Friday the 23rd of October, sort of the virtual cinema release, big opener. What's happening Friday?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We actually created a pre-show prior to the actual virtual release. Kimera hosted the pre-show, and it featured empresses that came after her. So it's going to be a great show. I was finally able to edit Kimera's performance during her coronation, which actually came out really well. So that's something that nobody has ever seen before yet. So that's something exciting for the audience to watch. So yeah, and then there's going to be a panel discussion afterwards, which Kimera was also a part of. Our executive producer, David Lasman, is also part of that discussion. But it will be a chance for all the viewers to, if they don't know about the April Council, to really immerse themselves about this subculture that, that is a huge part of our history as a community.
And where can people find information about that?
At roxy.com/50-years-of-fabulous. Yes, that's it. Yeah.
We'll put the link on our site, outofthebay.org.
Okay, perfect.
Super. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay. My guests were 50 Years of Fabulous filmmaker Jethro Padalinghug and Kimera Rouge, who is featured in the film, and Empress 50 of the Imperial Council of San Francisco. The online cinema release of 50 Years of Fabulous is this Friday night, October 23rd, presented by Frameline Distribution and San Francisco's Roxy Theater. Learn more on our website, outinthebay.org, where we'll post links about the film and about Friday's event. That's outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this show and past shows and share them with friends. And sign up for our weekly email newsletter and subscribe to Out in the Bay via Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. You can also make a donation there to help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. We know it's a tough time for many, but if you can afford to help keep this nonprofit service going for yourself and for others who might not be able to afford it, please consider a gift. Just click the donate button at outinthebay.org. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. Thanks, Holly. Thanks also to San Francisco Public Press and its radio station, KSFP 102.5 FM in San Francisco, for bringing us back on the air in June. Thanks also to co-producers Troop Nguyen and Kendra Klang. If you'd like to join our team, we could use some help with program production, distribution, promotion, fundraising, bookkeeping, graphics. If you have a related skill, there's a good chance we could use you. So please write to us if interested. Send email to outinthebaysf@gmail.com. That's outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Or send us a message through our website, outinthebay.org. We're thrilled to remind you about our new partnership with the Bay Area Reporter, the BAR, Northern California's oldest and largest circulation LGBTQ newspaper and online news service. We'll have a short article on the BAR's website every Friday with a link to our feature for the week. And once a month, the BAR's political columnist, Matthew S. Bajaco, or another BAR journalist, will come on out in the Bay to give us a roundup of important stories in the queer community. Visit the Bay Area Reporter online at ebar.com. That's ebar.com. Or pick up a copy of the print edition at a bookstore, community center, or newsstand near you. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for joining us. Out in the Bay.